You are listening to.
Listening to.
You are listening to.
Black is.
Black is.
Black is.
Black is.
Black is.
BlackIsOnline.com.
Break!
Going on, y'all?
What's up, y'all?
This your man Chris, one half of the brothers Layman. Got Casey in the building.
Yes, yes. Hi, everybody.
What's going on? Thank you for checking in, tuning in to another episode of the Black Is Break, brought to you by the Black Is Network. Before we get into this episode, we're gonna read a little feedback that we've gotten. We appreciate that, people sending in, letting us know we're doing you enjoy what we're doing.
Yes, thank you. Definitely appreciate it, and it's encouraging.
First one is from Blessed. I responded to a show about individual time in passing. We did about with Rachel Dolezal. That was back in early November. Father daughter date.
That was a good one.
Says, ironic that the Jewish girl was mentioned. My mother and I have often seen people that identify as white that we thought were black. My mom has more stories about this from getting to know these people and has known people that passed for white from years ago when it was less likely for others to question them. That Jewish girl probably really is black, and she doesn't even know it.
Right.
Appreciate that. Yeah, it's...
That wasn't even joking at all.
We know some. I have stories with my great-grandmother, that my mom and aunts with a... push her to go into the stores and like, well, you can pass. She didn't particularly like it. But you gotta use it to your advantage at certain points.
Do you? Once upon a time.
Back then, yeah. I mean, it was like a survival tactic. Like,
but then why not use it now, I guess? If you find yourself in a situation where you see that you're being... misread, literally, in regards to ethnicity, and it makes you privy to information you ordinarily wouldn't be privy to.
Yeah, I mean, if you
I don't know.
If it's like more like stealth, like a kind of ninja type of thing where I'm going in here and I'm looking, but if it's like some harm coming to some black people and I'm just going like
be a
act
part
like
of it.
I don't want to get involved. I'm like, no, that's when you're supposed to just. You know, come from behind. You know, but
yeah, utilize what privilege you have to try to make some of that.
It's a deep comment, but thank you for that.
Send
us a another one, the one from a couple weeks ago with our Black Words Matter. I think this is with the same crew people that's going to be on this one. We were talking about Trump and. People saying ridiculous things. I was with Trump and Raven Simone getting white validation.
Yeah.
Going through all those.
I remember that session.
I know I'm really late commenting, but just catching up on these latest shows. It's very important what black people say and how they react in certain situations. However, it does surprise me when blacks don't support other blacks or adopt a stance that is against the uplifting of other blacks, which typically falls within the white conservative category. Sometimes I don't understand this, but hey, people have different upbringings, and I would typically assume these types of black people have spent the better part of their lives trying to be accepted by white people, though they never are truly accepted. That's real.
That's so real. Like, stop waiting for it. be waiting for a very, very long time.
We all want validation to be recognized for what we do and our successes.
This is true.
You know, but you know, a certain large group of people, it really don't matter. They're just going to judge you off what they see. If they don't like that, then it doesn't matter what you do.
Yeah, and it's human nature to want to solicit a reaction from another human. Validation is important, and it really doesn't matter sometimes where it comes from. But you do have... There are oftentimes we hold certain people's validation of us in higher regard than others.
Yes.
You know? And it can be to our detriment.
Yeah, don't think it is. We think we want to avoid the short-term pain of, you know, what's all going on and what can happen to us being black, the bad things.
Right.
You feel like if we get this white acceptance, they'll leave me alone. Maybe it'll all be all good. But in the end, you still that color.
Mm-hmm. That doesn't change. There's nothing you can do about it.
Yeah, you feel like, oh, they won't hate me. Maybe they'll just not really like me as much. Maybe I can survive. Yeah, but not really. Because once they get rid of all the ones they really don't like, they just kick you off next.
Yeah.
So, yeah, thank you, Bless, for those two sending us that feedback. You know, you sent it in before. We appreciate you listening to us and writing in. Another one we got, this was off of Stitcher, in the little comment section. This was based on the last episode about the father's daughter, which said, is Lucius Scooterberger. I really don't like the fact that there aren't more The Break episodes. The topics discussed here are really good for the community and our culture. We need this, especially with this generation. Keep it going.
Mm-hmm.
I appreciate that.
Yes. It's making me wish, or it's making me want to try to have more sessions in the new year.
Because
we love doing it. And there's so many things that happen that can be discussed. And it's a good time. I'm glad that other people listening to it are having a positive reaction to it.
Yeah.
And find that what we're talking about is important and relevant.
Yeah, we try. I know we have moments where it is a weekly show and sometimes I'm not able to get it out.
Mm-hmm.
We try.
Yes,
we try to do as much as podcast as we can. Sometimes episodes can be a little late because we do record monthly. Mm-hmm. So sometimes it's not always fresh.
Mm-hmm.
But what we think that we always take a fresh take on it. And sometimes it's always cool if, you know, people have had their say already.
Right.
We can kind of continue the conversation from where those stop.
Exactly.
So, yeah, appreciate that. Glad you enjoying The Break. As y'all know, y'all can check us out on Stitcher, iTunes, TuneIn Radio, SoundCloud, Player FM, all those spots. And last bit of feedback is a voicemail that we got recently.
Hi, this is Liz from Unscripted Podcast. I was calling in for feedback. How are you guys doing? Just wanted to leave my feedback on the Raising a Daughter Break episode that I just listened to. It was amazing. The fact that you are even interested in knowing people's input, especially that from other black women, on how you could be a more effective dad or some things that you should make sure you do, things that you make sure you don't do as a father. I think that right there is the biggest step, and that is probably one of the best things that you could do is show interest. As a black woman who didn't have her father around all of the time as a child, I can tell you from what you said, being there, that is the most important. Make sure that you're there. Make sure that you show interest. And most importantly, make sure that your kids know that you love them and how you feel about them and where they stand with you. But I just really wanted to let you all know that I absolutely love the episode, love the topic as usual. The Break is one of my favorite things to listen to, and commend you on such a great job in putting that out there. But that's all I wanted to say. Thanks.
Word.
Thank you, Lish. Appreciate that.
Yes. Thank you so much. I was thinking about that episode today. and hanging out with Isley, and just how I'm very grateful, honey, that you are her father, because I know what she's learning from being around you and the sort of attention that she receives and how that's going to impact her in such an amazing way. I'm very grateful.
I'm grateful to be her father. I'm glad to have her. It's fun. It's a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was happy to do the episode. You know, I like asking questions. It feels like every episode, I'm just talking about watching Love and Hip Hop New York, Inevitable. You know, I didn't grow up with my father and Black in Chicago. He's
Chris
like,
really
Lord.
Gets mad too when he hears these things. Like if we're watching something and somebody makes the statement that they were without their dad or something, he's just like, oh my God, here we go again. Yeah. Like he gets pissed off.
Yeah, it's one thing when you feel like it's a serious thing.
Mm-hmm.
But on these little, with these, especially with shows with these women, and they're like, why are you such a damn fool? And then lo and behold, at some point, I didn't have my father around.
You're like,
oh,
oh
my God, what the hell are we doing? So yeah, now I'm trying to be on it, man. You know, I had a great example, so I'm just trying to carry that forward.
Yeah, you did.
You know, and trying to make sure for those who didn't have that example, didn't change it. You got to stop somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. If you see a pattern, you don't have to continue it. Stop it.
Nope. But yeah, thank you, Lish. You guys can check Lish out at the Unscripted Podcast. It's a great show.
Right.
All right, y'all. So, so getting into this episode, we recorded probably about a month ago. This one kind of revolves around the protests at Missouri that happened a month or so ago.
Mm-hmm.
And we kind of get into that and just protests at universities in general and athletes specifically, but celebrities using their voice to speak out and using that platform. So we hope you guys enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
As you know, if you want to leave us any comments or any feedback or what you guys thought of the show, you can do that via email at kc@blackkidsonline.com. You can do that on Facebook at Black Kids Magazine, Twitter at Black Kids Online, a hotline 323-455-4219, and on the show page at blackkidsonline.com. Thanks for listening.
Peace. Says, what we do know is that members of Mizzou's Concerned Student 1950, a student group named for the year the first Black graduate student was admitted to the university, staged a series of protests and peace rallies that were also largely ignored by the administration. To get the UN President Tim Wolf's attention, members of Concerned Student 1950 staged a protest where they blocked Wolf's car during a homecoming parade. Yeah, it said, as reported by the Huffington Post, on October 10th, a group of Black students interrupted the Mizzou homecoming parade wearing t-shirts that read, 1839 was built on my black, referring to Mizzou's founding and slave labor. The students stopped right in front of the convertible that Wolf was traveling in as he waved to two parade watchers. The students took out a megaphone and one by one began speaking about incidents of systemic and anecdotal racism from the founding year, 1839 through 2015. A crowd of mostly white people watching the parade began to yell at the Black students within 1 minute to move on and get out of the streets. Took 11 minutes before a couple of police officers intervened and asked the Black student activist to step aside to allow Wolf's car to drive. White people cheered when this happened. Wolf remained silent the entire time. With the car's top down, he could easily see the entire encounter unfolding right in front of him. Another video from the Columbia, Missourian shows the emotional state the activists were in after their demonstration. Jonathan Butler, who would later start a hunger strike and protest, I heard about him too, shouts on the megaphone, "We will not continue to be called niggers on this campus. Believe that." So no one was hurt in that situation. Then 10 days after the homecoming incident, Concerned Student 1950 issued a list of demands, which included an apology from Wolf and his removal from his position. The Columbia Missourian reported that Wolf met with the group on October 26th, but failed to meet their demands. Wolf met privately with members of Concerned Student 1950 on October 26th, but he did not agree to any of the group's demands. Butler confirmed that he did receive an email from Wolf the next day, but because he asked Wolf that all correspondence go through the Concerned Student 1950 group email address, he was waiting for Wolf to email the group before he would respond. After hearing nothing further about the changes, the university planned to make the support of black students, the university planned to make in support of black students on campus. UM graduate student Jonathan Butler solidified his decision to go on a hunger strike. And then there's a whole thing about the hunger strike. So this goes on, and like this took some time. Yeah. So what's the story with the hunger strike? Butler, who was a member of the Concerned Student 1950, as well as other groups, began a hunger strike for Wolf's resignation on November the 2nd, which was supported by Concerned Student 1950. To support Butler, members of Concerned Student 1950 staged a camp out in front of Wolf's office until he answered their demands. The school newspaper, The Man Eater, reported on November 3rd. On Monday night, members of Concerned Student 1950 organized a camp out on Carnahan Quad to support Butler's cause. Butler said the hunger strike will end when Wolf resigns, is removed from office, or when Butler's organs fail. The camp out has a similar goal, and Concerned Student 1950 member said Concerned Student 1950 member Ayanna Poole. Nine tents are set up in the quad, many of them with signs reading, hashtag Mizzou Hunger Strike, which is the hashtag Butler used in a letter sent to the university officials and posted on his Facebook announcing his hunger strike. The camp out raises awareness, Poole said. It lets administration, faculty, everyone, it lets them know that we will not be moved. We will continue to fight. We want more people to be aware about the issue. People aren't aware of the things that marginalized students go through and injustices on and off campus. This brings that discussion. It makes it happen. For us to be here in the quad, that makes us accessible to students on campus. 5 days after Butler's hunger strike, Wolf met with protesters on campus in a tense 10-minute exchange that led to no real solutions. The Man Eater reported, the protesters gathered in support of graduate student Jonathan Butler, who was on a hunger strike.
Can I say something real quick?
Yeah.
It sounds like this poor president was so not ready. And he didn't even know. Like, he should have got a diversity consultant. He had no idea what he needed to do to, like,
to deal with this.
Are we going now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't think he was taking it seriously.
I don't think he even had the first clue about how to address their grievances outside of, you know, could please resign. Because that doesn't even help them when if he resigns. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't know that the person who's going to replace him is going to make the environment more. But it's like, what do you do to address, I don't know, how many students did they say were at University of Missouri? To address, let's just say, 7,000 white people about their white privilege.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they there's footage of when they actually address him, and not, he wasn't ready. No, he wasn't ready at all. There's a couple of things. Well, I'm gonna bring up one thing I thought was interesting. There's a few things. I'm gonna start with this. I think it's interesting that it's the Concerned Citizens of 1950,
mm-hmm.
which it's probably an organization that came out in mm-hmm. 1950. When I was at Berkeley, we had the Third World Liberation Front of 1968, which was around the free speech movement. And in 1998, 30 years later, there was a hunger strike to get more black professors, to get more black students, to talk about the fact that we were getting swastikas on the campus. It is the very same thing. Now, that was 1998, which means that was, help me do some math, that was 17 years ago. So what's funny is this issue of integrating, of us integrating into white universities is like this narrative that's now been happening. So 68, I thought Cal's struggle was old. We'll go to 50, probably older than 50. We'll just start with 50.
Right.
So that's 65 years of the same narrative. And I'm sure they're probably fighting the exact same thing they were fighting for in 1950.
Yeah.
So that's disheartening and troubling.
It is.
Well, people, but the other thing, were using the free speech you know, being called a nigga, people are using the free speech argument, you know, like, oh, well, we don't want to quell free speech on campus.
I was watching Bill Maher last night.
Oh, really?
And his fucking cognitive dissonance. He has this chip on his shoulder about comedians not having free speech on college campuses and wanted to project it onto this issue. And this is what pissed me off. Oh, yeah. And he was like, oh, this whole safe space, and I'm sure it's bad, da-da-da. And I'm like, do you know what it's like to be black and walk around and have people call you nigger? Do you know what it's like to walk around and see a swastika? He totally minimized it under the guise, like you're saying, free speech and the fear of safe space. And get your little chip on your shoulder, comedian. You got kicked out of Berkeley shit. And I went to Berkeley. That's fine. And I'm one of the people back then. Yeah, we used to make sure ignorant motherfuckers like you didn't come on our campus to spread your ignorance. And that's not a freedom of speech issue, bro. Like, any university, we're the students. We have a right to say who we want speaking at our graduation. And I'm probably, and it happened at Cornell. When you graduated, they probably asked you, who did you want to speak? It's always been our choice. It's always been every student's choice to reject. So for you to take that and want to apply it to this Midwestern situation, you're not from Missouri. You clearly don't know shit about Missouri. And I feel like his racist true colors are finally showing in this last year with the things with the Muslims. And with this, and it's just like, and I've seen black people
that's
get
so
on this.
Funny that,
I've seen black people jump on this.
Two colors with Bill Maher. Bill Maher has always been provocative, and yeah, if someone says he's a racist, I actually won't ever argue against them because I understand exactly what they're talking about. But I think he does have a principle that doesn't pivot on race, and he's willing to call out real racists who are principalists and just hate, you know, folks of color just because. So yeah. I give him a little. But for the free speech thing, I think if you're your student body president is having hate speech, even though it's free hate speech, thrown at them, and you don't know how to address it and how to have a sobering conversation about the culture and to make moves to change the culture in your university as a president, he actually really deserves to have been grown up.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I mean, one thing on Bill Maher, which was great, was Jay Leno, which I'm always amazed by how liberal he is and that he actually will admit that he's that liberal. And he was, you know, very in support of the Missouri students Bill Maher was going on his rant. I don't think Bill Maher is like racist. I really don't. I think of him as like one of those white people that's like, I'm so not racist that I say whatever I want. Do you know what I mean? Even if what I say is racist.
Like, he's not worried about how black people see him.
Exactly.
Because
like,
he's
I'm like,
really
I
clear
know
that he's
I am
not racist.
Exactly.
Yeah,
right. I feel like if there's a certain confidence that makes him say things that sometimes
he's still
are
racist.
Like, dude.
I mean, and that's.
I know, and people
and it's
take
a white,
it that way,
and it's
so.
Like this. It's like this. Every person, right, is Eurocentric in America. Every person. It's like, I'll give you a better example. Sean Penn. Sean Penn to me is a much better person insofar as demonstrating his care for black people than Bill Maher. He actually puts himself in those places. But he said some racist shit during the Oscars. Mm-hmm. Jon Stewart did some racist
shit.
Oh, wait,
the green card thing?
Jon Stewart did some racist shit to one of his writers.
Mm-hmm.
And Jon Stewart is clearly, come on. Progressive, down for the cause.
Totally.
But the reality is when these progressive people have their white moments, they're still white moments.
Right.
And I'm not letting them off the hook. Especially in the case of youth, kids. I'm sorry. To me, undergraduate students are kids to me.
No,
they're 18 to 21.
By definition.
They're under attack. And what I'm saying is in the context of this conversation and other conversations, he's just said racist shit, and he can be as confident as he wants. It's not about, and I tell this people all the time, it's not about your intention, it's about how it's received. I can say I'm not a chauvinist, but if a woman receives something I'm doing as threatening, then I still need to reflect and check myself.
No, definitely.
Right? And so, like, I feel like in the context of this conversation, it was coming from a place of white privilege. It wasn't coming from a place of empathy. It was coming from a place of, I'm going to keep it real. He's had this thing, and I can tell you watch the show, so you feel me.
Oh, yeah.
He's been on this thing the past month or 2 months about how comedians are the most oppressed people because college students bang on them. And now you have an issue with college students banging on a white man. And I'm sorry. I don't care who it is. Every white man, everyone, I'm sorry, takes an issue when a black person calls white men out on this shit. I don't care who it is. You can say, well, da da da. I'm sorry. Every white man, when they see a black person.
Maybe not
person,
Tim Wise.
Yeah, maybe not Tim Wise. You know, okay. Touche. Touche. Okay. Touche. You're absolutely, maybe not Tim Wise. But every other white person, when they see that, a little thing goes like this little like, he's black, he's checking a white person, this doesn't compute. And I feel like Bill Maher had that moment of, no, these, they stood in their rights and their consciousness, and they told this white man what's good, and it's not about being PC, like, he's wrong. The it's not even like safe space, like, oh, you're offending me. If you're in an atmosphere where people are calling you nigger and shit is coming up in feces, that's hate. To take the time out to shit on something
and then
in a specific
write
shape
that shit right
is hatred.
Yeah,
and,
I would just say though that his motivation
it
in
is
making
such a
that
red
comment
flag, it's a red flag. I'm sorry, I'm an educator. As an educator, it's a red flag. If I'm in any educational community in which there is a feces painted flag and people calling people niggers, what educational place, what place of higher education is it okay for being called a nigger to be commonplace?
Well, University of Missouri.
Yeah. And listen to this. So,
but you at,
yes, of course.
With the whole the hunger strike, at some point he ended up having dialogue with the protesters, and they said he got the opportunity, the president got the opportunity to speak his piece during the gathering. He said, Butler's voice for social justice is important and powerful. He is being heard and I am listening. I am thankful for the leadership provided by him and the other student leaders in raising awareness of racism, injustice, and intolerance. It's not clear when the next exchange occurred, but Twitter user Kiana Jade recorded a video on or about the same time Wolf met with Butler, where he discussed systematic oppression. His response to it sent demonstrators and Twitter into a frenzy.
Yep.
He said during the gathering, systematic oppression is because you don't believe that you have the equal opportunity for success.
That was what did it.
And that's when shit got real. By Saturday, November 6th, about 30 African American members of Mizzou's football team stood in solidarity with other students asking for Wolf to step down from his position. That's when things got real. According to Vice Sports, the entire Missouri team seemingly decided to join the boycott, with Coach Gary Pinkle tweeting a picture stating that they are all standing together. The Mizzou family stands as one. We are united. We are behind our players. Concerned
students. Oh, yeah, they weren't going to play. They were going to boycott their upcoming game.
Mm-hmm.
They were going to lose. Somebody said about, yeah, I lose $1 million from not playing. And even, I see Michael Sam even came out and was like, yeah, I'm proud of them. I just see they didn't do nothing. It wasn't really paid attention to until the money got affected.
Yeah, it says when an individual athlete takes on a single school or the NCAA as a whole, it's usually an uphill battle and a losing one. A lone football player has no rights and scant leverage. He always can be replaced. He can be outspent in court and bludgeoned in the court of public opinion. But every football player together, they can essentially control a university. Football is of utmost importance to the University of Missouri. Because of football, the Southeastern Conference pays Mizzou $31.2 million per year, and that number is on the rise. Mostly because of football, Missouri brings in $83 million per year. Pinkel is the highest paid employee in the state. Missouri couldn't afford to simply cut the scholarships of its football players, not the entire team, not the 30 players who initially decided to boycott, because if it did, it wouldn't have a competitive football team to field. It couldn't fire Pinkel either, because that would decimate recruiting. Either decision would likely infuriate donors. In this case, it was just a matter of the amount of money the Mizzou Tigers football program brings in annually. The Washington Post reported that if the team didn't end the strike by November 14th, when the Tigers take on the Brigham Young University Cougars, the university would have had to pay $1 million for breaking a college between the two colleges. Wolf had to step down.
And I want to, and I'm going to add something, and Tash, you may feel me, but like I have a pastor, when he baptizes people, he says, you know, he used the old African proverb of, you know, it takes a village to raise a child. And then he adds, it takes children to raise the village, in that there are times where you have to look at kids and sometimes what would you do, like if they're standing in front of you? And what I'm loving about this is you have these kids, like I said before, they're kids who play a sport. who stood up for something, and I'm waiting for the NBA now. I'm waiting for the NFL. Right. I'm waiting for all these other adults who have less to lose, because these gentlemen are not in the league yet. Mm-hmm. So this means they have less to lose. So I'm waiting for these gentlemen, these adults, to stand the fuck up for something beyond just one educational institution. And stand up for what if we boycott for this? Because the reality, and I'm waiting for someone to bring up the argument, well, they have so much to lose. Well, they've gone on strike for other things. Mm-hmm. They've halted seasons for other things. They can't halt the season for peace. They can't halt the
what would be something education. You'd like to see them strike for?
Oh, name a policy. Like, I'd love to see them strike for no more police brutality, for creating a federal law in which everybody wears fucking cameras. Whatever policy we've been advocating for the past 15, 20 years, for the reverse of Proposition 209 in California, you pick. But I'm just saying, like, the fact that they were able to come together that quickly, and these are kids with a lot to lose, and they're able to figure it out, something tells me if everyone in, not even the whole NBA, if everyone in one team, you could affect the entire state, you can affect the city. If this college team has shown that, then I think a professional team could do the same.
Mm-hmm.
They can.
Mm-hmm. Can they? Well, the thing is, they can. It's just, yeah, I had a listener who, when that happened, he brought up the fact about, you know, how come, you know, the Clippers could have done more in regards to Donald Sterling. And I was like, yeah, but it's one thing getting a president fired from a university versus forcing a guy to sell his business.
Yeah.
It worked out, you know, because somebody taped it and put something out. But to me, it's like if Donald Trump, that whole, like, his racial practices in his real estate, I'm like, if the NBA didn't give a shit about that when that became public, they don't care. It's a lot of risk.
I'm going to say I think that's a faux comparison in that we're talking about a guy who really said something in private, right, mm-hmm. who it got caught up. And I don't think any person should be held responsible for what they say in private, right, about the person's beliefs. Then you have someone who has actual power over them and talk to me. He's the president of the university, so what he's saying informs the policy he has, you know what I'm saying, in his institution in a more unique way that Donald Sterling just doesn't have. You know what I mean? Like, this guy has their academic futures in their hands. He has admissions policies. I mean, there's so many more ramifications where Sterling's talking about who he doesn't want around his girlfriend.
Yeah. Also,
and I'm going to keep it real. Like, I'm with Sterling. Like, and Chris Rock said this first. Like, I don't want black basketball players around my girlfriend either. Like if I have a girlfriend, like, if John Stockton kicks around my girlfriend, cool. I don't want Magic kicking around my girlfriend. Like, I don't want LeBron around my girlfriend. Like,
okay, it's a whole different topic.
Right, but also there's a big difference between professional athletes and college athletes, because professional athletes are in a union, mm-hmm. and that's a whole different thing when it comes to striking and what you can do and all that. And college students aren't, obviously, so they have a lot more freedom, I think, in that sense. But I would be happy with not necessarily using like a boycott, but just a voice that you don't right. hear. Like, I mean, black celebrities.
No. But to your point, the union to me isn't a knock against; it's a knock for. The fact that they have a union means they have an organization by which they can demand things.
But yeah, demand but they what? Have, they can't demand policy change yeah, from their union. Their union deals with them, like their workplace, and if yeah, they had racist asked, policies that they were that's being why I asked subjected what to, you were,
like the kids. At least at the University of Missouri, they were acutely affected by something. And, you know, they understood, like, no, this is a real issue. This is not just in a bubble or, like, Fox News reports only two incidences. This is a systematic thing that we're going through. And we're going to use our voice together collectively to say we don't want to go through this. It was affecting them and their mental health and their well-being immediately. Whereas a football team or a basketball team or a baseball team, I would imagine have to be something that really affected them. And sometimes when you make a lot of money, you live in a bubble. And the stuff that you don't think global warming is affecting you, but yeah, brother, it is, you know? And it's also different. They were asking for something very clear, like we need this president to step down because he's ignoring this hunger strike or he's made these comments. We're asking someone to, or asking the U.S. government, which has a lot of moving parts.
What about asking the city where you work in to be more stringent on how they treat police brutality? But having the U.S. government
where it has a lot of... Arian, thanks. Asking the U.S. government or any government.
But no. I'm interrupting you because you're presuming that my point is asking the U.S. government.
That's the example I gave. I said, what would you like to change? And you used a policy about a federal policy.
I also used a policy about Proposition 209, which affects California.
Yeah, but even California has a lot of moving parts. So you can't, it just can't be the governor who decides that the law is no more. You know, like, if you'd be voting for a law, for new laws, striking for new laws, you'd be striking for a while.
Not necessarily. But what I'm saying is it hasn't been done yet. It hasn't been put into effect yet. And we'd have to see what that looks like. And all I'm saying is,
but you would think right now, a good use of your time would to be wait to, like, we would like Proposition whatever you mentioned turned down.
Doing it, I think, like we saw, I think the timetable would be different.
There'd be a politician who would milk it and be like, I don't care if they strike. They're just going to make them. And this is my cause. I'm going to stick behind it. They're not going to get me to change my vote. I mean,
every politician, when they go to that city, says, I love the Mets, or I love this team, or I love that team. I mean, yeah, that I just, whole team.
I see policy being hard to change. Even the police brutality thing, I personally see it being really hard to strike against police brutality. Like, what do you want?
Yeah, the tie to the boycott is the hard part.
Yeah,
to see that connection. But I am, like, all for calling out black celebrities. Like, I am all for that. I think it's ridiculous.
So why are celebrities but not athletes?
I'm considering them all in the same category. Right. Athletes, celebrities. Well, because to me, I want you to have a voice. When you have a voice that can reach more people than the average person, right, and you deal with the same things that everybody else deals with, like, yeah, I look at that as a character flaw personally, to not be willing to step out and say something.
Yeah,
I just think it's really interesting because there was a time when you take someone like Oprah, who didn't speak out the way she does now. But Oprah established herself in a way where now people love her even when they don't want to love her. And they respect her when they don't want to respect her.
People hate her even when they don't want to love her.
And she gets criticized a lot still. But we said earlier tonight that she shows more than she explains or tells. And she, you know, if you go back, I don't even remember hearing Oprah talking about God. Like, people used to question whether or not she was even a Christian. She was always a Christian, but she knew that she wasn't yet in a space where she could do the things that she does now. If you take somebody like Beyonce and Jay-Z, who say absolutely nothing, but they do a tremendous amount of work, and they don't tell everybody about it because it's not about them, the face. It's about the work that needs to be done. And I think that.
Right.
And when it comes to you can, Beyonce, their you face can, is so much more valuable than that work. Like,
it's
we
not.
Need that
it's
face.
Really.
That's just not.
It's opinion. Really not. And I think
people have a tendency to fall into a place of being passive when it comes to their work. And I honestly feel like it's specific to black people. We have a tendency to believe that we have to be passive in order to make change happen. The moment we become aggressive or outspoken, it frightens people.
And there's the white gaze aspect also, obviously. Yeah. I mean, yeah. Jay-Z and Beyonce sell a lot of stuff to white people,
right?
Just like Michael Jordan did, and just like, you know, a lot
and
of
they don't want to lose that. The thing is, I feel both of your points. Like, on one hand, I feel like that quiet work does need to happen, but at the same time, when you have a platform, why not utilize it? I mean, you have the biggest microphone in front of you. Your word will mean so much, you know. And when you see so many celebrities do things, they utilize their platforms to share trivial information, such as this new underground artist that they think is hot, and they send this tweet, yo, you should listen to this mixtape, and all of a sudden that person is now the next big thing, but they don't say anything about social issues that impact the community to whom they say they're speaking to, or whose stories they're saying they're sharing, or who they say they identify with, or where they come from, their roots. They don't talk about that at all. To me, that silence is deafening. It's almost part, it's like you're complicit to the right. problem, because you're not making it's a like statement the, one way or another.
It's like you're in the closet about being black and right. it affecting you. It's like if you were gay and you were you know, a minority, and you were seeing all this oppression and a big celebrity against gay people in the world, and you just kind of bit your tongue and never said anything about gay people deserving equal rights in this country. And there's black people who do that. They like, it affects them. It affects their family. Yeah. They know the pain, but you know, they, because you know, they understand. And also too, celebrities have a tendency to, have a bit of, this is my public persona.
Yeah,
that's my brand. And this is
exactly.
me. And I don't share all exactly. of me with the public, because that's my brand.
Yeah.
And so there can be that dichotomy that they have about it. But they don't understand when the brand and themselves match up and there's an authenticity, people tend to really connect with that.
Yeah.
But,
and you also have, they have to be, I'm sorry.
No.
You have to also be willing to be criticized, because right. the moment you speak out, the criticism
and lose
is
some money.
Right. Like when Viola right. Davis said what right. she said when she got that award about, you know, how she feels like she's at this place that she can't get to, looking at white women. The criticism that she got, yeah. not only from white folks, but from black people.
Oh, I had a black woman try to really explain to me, and I'm looking at her like, you're joking.
Right.
You're really trying to convince me that Viola has a chip on her shoulder. She doesn't fucking chip on her shoulder.
No. Yeah. It takes courage. It takes courage.
It does take courage.
But I think that the last thing that I wanted to say, though, is that everyone has a role. And I'm not saying that every celebrity should be silent. But I also don't think that every celebrity should have to be should be cornered into saying something. Okay. I think we all
and I don't
play
want
a
all
role.
Of them to.
No, right.
I think
Raven Simone,
exactly.
Master P, certain people, Lil Wayne. I don't want him to get
no, paid. No. And I'm sad that somebody's name like Raven Simone even comes into, you know,
conversation
this conversation, because mm-hmm. you know she's
that's so Raven.
That you know, but I think that you know. Like, let's say I do what I do so that other people can do what they do. You know, I work in an office and I work in an office and I deal with a different type of, you know, racism than Tash does. If, at, you know, I'm sure you do, but you know, I more so, let me just say, I interact with white people in a way so that other people can be more outspoken in other ways. And I'm not necessarily like banging on people at work. And, you know, I mean, I stand up for myself a lot, and I'm not, you know, kind of in a corner, like not saying what I feel, but I'm also, you know, I get along with people at work. I deal with shit at work.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there's a lot of black people who go to work, they get along, they deal with the shit, and they put white people at a certain level of ease so that other people can do something more. And I think that it all works together. And it's not like someone can walk up to me at work and call me a nigger and I'm going to be like, okay. That's not what I'm saying, but
That's fine for someone, as long as they don't find themselves losing their own self-respect and swallowing their words and just kind of like burying a feeling. Yeah, because there's some people who are like, yeah, I really don't care. There's no confrontation here for me and I'm happy with it. And if that's how you feel, no one's asking you to be confrontational or to bring up an issue that doesn't mean anything to you. I think my only point was like, if you're closeted about it, if it means something to you, and you decide not to be the first one to address it in office culture, then it's avoidance. You're passing the buck for someone else to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
And then you might even benefit. That other person in the conference room, you might even benefit from their addressing it, but it was still avoidance.
I know, I'm sitting here because I'm like, I'm a terrible example, because even though I try to get along at work, I'm actually the person who's always saying shit at work.
We know this.
I know, but I do, I make an effort to be more agreeable at work. I do. I make an effort.
I do want to bring back to the Missouri thing, and I do, I'm going to put some tension, I'm going to bring it back and put a chip on my shoulder and say, I do think athletes in a city have a responsibility to that city. I think they have a responsibility to that community. I think the community buys the tickets. I think they support them. I think they build their brand.
Okay.
And I do think that it is totally, it does make sense for them to boycott. I'm going to go so far as say boycott.
But on a realistic level.
On a realistic level, there is shit realer than whether like, they get that check or not.
San Francisco can't boycott San Francisco. Like, the league has to boycott. Like, they're in a union together. You know what I mean? So it couldn't be, like, a... Not to, like, poke holes into your theory.
No. Because we do have to be realistic. We do have to be realistic and practical, but we also have to think outside the box. And I'm saying, like, these boxes that you're creating, I still don't see how there's extra legal ramifications. I don't see how it puts them at more exposure by them standing up for what they stand for as if they would if they were striking for their own salaries. I'm saying, like, the detriment to them is the same if it's unified. The other thing is we're not taking into account the relationship that football teams and the NFL, the relationship they actually have with real cities. The possibility that some of the coaches, the one good thing about the NFL is it is its own separate entity. It's not like CNN, for example, or these other companies that are owned by bigger corporations in mm-hmm. which their message is controlled. In a lot of ways, the NFL, the NBA, and the MLB are positioned in very strategically unique places in a way to where they could speak out, it could be powerful, and it could make a lot of sense. And I think they could partner with people who are in power within. In other words, I don't see how them standing up for that if they were to partner with the commissioner of the NFL, if they were to partner with their head coaches. I could see them being on the same side. We did, like, when we were at Cal. Let me finish. I'm gonna bring experience into this. Yeah. When we were at Cal, and we were, like, we overturned SB1, the first legislation against affirmative action in the state of California. It wasn't students. We got the faculty. We got the administration. We got the regents. We got the people we were protesting against on our side. And I'm saying, if you know anything about the real relationships in sports – the real relationships between the ads, the real relationships between the players and the owners, it is a work. I know we don't look at it like that, but these are companies too. These are places where people have real relationships. The coaches look at a lot of their players like human beings. And so what I'm saying is it doesn't have to be like the players versus the way you're positioning this worker versus employee relationship. It could be a partnership within the NFL. Because if you notice sports organizations, if you really looked at the times where people have spoken out, the NBA and the NFL really hasn't, like, shut it down. It's kind of been like, their big thing is just make sure you wear a tie when you're on TV. You can wear I Can't Breathe shirts. You can do all these political statements. Just look presentable and don't do drugs. That's kind of their thing.
So following that partnership.
Okay, go ahead.
What do you think the Baltimore Ravens should have done regarding Freddie, what was his name?
Freddie Gray.
What would you have recommended? And I'm. This is or what the Cleveland should have done with Tamir Rice or like I feel you like you're on to something. I'm just saying, what are you recommending that the players or even the players approaching their owner and the person in the head office and saying to them like, yo, we want to speak about
what this. If we I'm gonna answer your question. Recommend? What if we institutionalize Cop Watch? What if we make it so that Cop Watch is a part of...
I don't know gang what Cop Watch is, sorry.
Cop Watch is an interventionist organization. It's a large, for what they do, it's a large organization that basically monitors cops, and they basically follow laws to make sure that cops aren't being overstepping their boundaries with
regard
to police brutality.
Is this for Tamir, or is this for Freddie Gray?
To be honest, it could work for any city. I mean, you choose the city. You choose the incident, because it's happening in every major city. And even the ones that don't have national news stories, it's happening there. So you choose the city. The point is that this type of partnership and this type of advocacy is possible.
So you would have the players say, we're not playing until you institutionalize Cop Watch or until you make realistic
until you put forth whatever, like if we were to itemize, okay, how much does it cost to institute this program? But whatever it is, my point
is—that's presuming the players have roots in that.
My point is, right now, you want me to come up with a whole agenda for different cities, and I'm not going to do that. What I am going to argue and say is,
I'm not going to show up to work today.
I think it's more possible. I think it's more possible than you're giving credence to. And I'm not saying that I have the agenda for every city to stop police. And I think it's unfair for you to put that on me. But I do want to say this. I do want to say this.
Did you think I was asking you for the agenda for every city?
But you literally did ask me that.
No,
but
for one example. Just one example. What would you have them strike for?
I wouldn't say strike, but I would say the situation that went down in Cleveland, and you have somebody like a LeBron James. So if you had the black players of
– No, but he's advocating a strike.
No, but I'm going to say like – I'm going to say – You got players.
I keep saying organized, like whether you boycott, you don't play games, something where you're making a statement.
No, so if I say you got players from the Browns and the Cavaliers who first off come out and say, you know what, we don't condone what happened. We don't think that's right, and we think that something needs to be done about it. Once that's done, do you feel like that ain't enough? Like what they even the fact that because they don't usually say anything. So the fact that they were like, you know what went down was not cool and something needs to be looked at. If they say that, is that enough? Or you feel like, well,
people do that on Twitter anyhow. Okay, yeah, no, that's not enough. Okay, I agree with them. That's not enough.
But you're saying like they never say shit. So if they say, it's not, you know, that's not enough. Because you could say, well, celebrities need to do. But I was like, I'm sitting here like, people complain about that with people who got money. Like, why don't Oprah and Denzel? I'm like,
I'm saying right now we're talking about
a story where some 18, 19, 20, and 21-year-olds did it. But that's the story we're talking about.
But I think that's every time when we look at it, it seemed like something that got fixed. It was because of some 18, 19, 20-year-olds.
Why are we waiting for Jay-Z to say it?
I didn't bring up the Jay-Z thing. I'm saying right now these kids are taking the leadership. And I'm saying when the college kids... Mm-hmm. SCLC got down in the late 60s. Adults, Julian Bond, Martin Luther King, they were like, hey, these kids are onto some shit. Let's get with it. And I'm saying...
I think where you're losing me is that I am a sort of logical, like, want things to follow and make sense. And so with the students, they recognized a source of power that they had and they used it. And I think with the NFL players, they do also have a source of power. I don't know that it's to achieve what it sounds like you are talking about by necessarily striking. Now, I absolutely think that there could be a way that they could use their power to say, we want the NFL to be more involved in the community, like whether it's by money that they give to certain causes or whether it's presence. But as far as actually like, we're not going to play because we want the law in San Francisco to change. I don't see the connection between that goal. And that's where I'm having trouble. But I do think that absolutely.
Watch a film called Amazing Grace.
Tell us.
It's about a bunch of NBA players who try and strike because they want to stop nuclear proliferation. Mm-hmm. And it, to me, is a clear outline of how you can get people who have influence like as much. And you can correct Lehman. You correct me if I'm wrong. Mm-hmm. But when these NBA players go on strike, what happens to the ratings of the NBA? What happens to the influx of funds? What happens when they do go on strike?
When they do go on strike, the players end up losing money because they're not paid their salary. And so they're affected.
Right.
The owners. I don't think the staff of the NBA, I don't think they get paid. They never get talked about, but I know the players don't. The owners, they clearly have
force majeure
enough where they're taking a hit, but they are all right. I mean, they're the owners. Like, they've got liquid cash and all. They're not going to.
Right.
So. I'm with you on that. They could at least maybe put their money behind something like the strike. Like I could say, if like, you know what, we're going to strike. And then in their minds, you're like, we'll strike for like 5 games.
When you strike, you don't quit until you get what you want.
Right, but I mean, at some point, it would make an impact to look like at least these guys were willing to give up something to at least make a point. Now, I mean, because people asked that with the whole Mizzou thing. It was like, if their team was
winning, would they
have done the same thing?
Yeah, I heard that a lot.
And
maybe not. Maybe
they did. That didn't. Was the power they had. They had nothing to lose. Right. You know, like they were having a losing season. Yeah. So,
and that was going on. Other, I know I've seen, looked up the Ithaca, the Claremont McKenna, the Dean of Students McKenna, got.
Yeah. My friend's cousin is like the leader of that.
That's oh, okay.
Crazy. Yeah.
You know, it's going on in Yale. I mean, we had something, article earlier this year about Cal and UCLA, how they like 3% black and students would get a video and was like,
have you guys seen the articles about like why black kids are trying to, like why black kids are so adamant about going to historically white colleges?
I've not made
that argument. I think they still should go and there should be diversity on campus. But I've always found it like there's a lot of people who went to HBCUs who are just like
they were banging on them.
Yeah, like
they were saying, "Why don't niggas just go to like, the HBCU?"
This is
the street.
So foolish. You're trying to fit in a culture, and you're giving your money to a culture that clearly does not, especially at University of Missouri, that clearly is not accepting or is making no space for your acceleration. You know, Spelman has more black women doctorates than any institution or all the Ivy Leagues combined. Like, they're just like, you're so foolish for trying to force this. And I think it's foolish not to have a conversation in those other settings, too. So we need people represented in those settings. And they're brave. Yeah.
It's not like that. I mean, I went to Northwestern, which was beyond segregated, but still, black people were a part of the school.
Yeah,
you know?
The football team.
I mean, it's not well that for sure, but I mean, we definitely. I don't know. It's just interesting because I do consider Northwestern to be extremely segregated, but I didn't experience anything along the lines
of
these
University of Missouri,
of name calling, or
I. You were in Chicago too, you know.
Yeah, and I mean, it definitely to me was the most racist environment I'd ever been in, but I was coming from the Bay Area, so it was shocking to me. I'm sure people there, it was an improvement from where they come from, but, you know, I don't know. So to me, this is weird. And also, I've never been to an HBCU, so I can't speak to that experience. And if you haven't been at a white school, you can't speak to that experience, really. Yeah. It doesn't feel as bad as I think it's pictured, you know? Like, it's almost like you have, at least at Northwestern, we had our own little HBCU. But we were just our own community.
You have black graduation?
Yeah. Well, we didn't, but yes, most schools do. I know. I don't know why we didn't. We're just
they weren't allowed to have it at Northwestern.
We had everything separate but that for some reason.
Black grad.
No.
Boo.
I know.
USC got a black grad.
I know. I don't know why.
I didn't know there was black grad until after I graduated. And my friends were talking about black grad. I was like, what are you talking about? But again,
okay. So, like, the whole thing is black grad.
It's like I'm so confused. I was like, you guys actually get to have a separate graduation.
Yeah, we have white grad
with one person
in a room.
Three.
Three. Oh, okay.
Yeah, three or five. It's an odd number, no matter.
Oh, no, wait. It's a thing. They do really have white.
Okay. No, that.
Okay. Yeah. That'd be awesome. That'd be awesome.
That would be. That would be.
I want to go to the Howard white grad.
No, white grad is graduation from the engineering school.
Oh, right.
That was
grown. Yeah, because they smart enough to be engineers.
Right. Grown.
In case you missed the punchline.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Black Is Break. We'd love to hear your thoughts on the subject. Hit us up, let us know what you think. You can reach us on Facebook at Black Is Magazine, on Twitter at Black Is Online. You can hit us up via email at kc@blackisonline.com. Leave a message on the hotline, 323-455-4219. You can always check us out on our website, blackisonline.com. Thanks again.